You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Momoozy, alongside me as always, the three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong. BJ, is there any point in me asking you how you're doing today? Because I feel like I know the answer.
Only terrific, you know. Well, only terrific, Mo. That's a choice. I get to own that one, and so it's great when you realize that you have a choice. And not only do you have a choice, I only have one choice. Only terrific. And I learned that from a good friend of mine many years ago, as a young guy. That, you know, success, anything you want to achieve, you have a choice in that. You have a say so in that. It's very empowering. And not only is it empowering, Mo, it's, you know, it gives you a way to think about the world, no matter what's going on. So I never forgot that. And, you know, a lot of people laugh, but it's just kind of one of those things. It's just a reminder, you know, it's just kind of a little, it gives you, it's like a little wake up call when people ask me, hey, only terrific. And, so it's pretty funny. You laugh about it.
You mentioned you learned this years ago. The other day I found a video of you from years ago, and it's not a video of you playing basketball. It's a video of you in the weight
room. Oh,
and it's a young BJ Armstrong power cleaning 300 pounds. Yeah. Now, over here in the UK, we lift in kilograms, right? We don't lift in pounds, right? Mm-hmm. So I sent a video to a friend of mine who's a full-time personal trainer in impeccable fitness. You know, like, this guy's, all he does all day is lift weights, calisthenics, you name it, he does it, right? I said, what do you think of this video? He said, yo, 300 pounds. That's insane. Who is this? I said, this is BJ from the podcast. He said, no wonder he says that you're sitting around eating donuts, bro. 300 pounds is crazy to be power cleaning. Yeah. BJ, what's the secret here? What am I missing here? Because my power clean ain't touching 300 pounds yet.
Yeah, well, you know, Mo, when I was coming through this business, when I say business, because it truly is a business, when I was coming through the business of sports, I was very fortunate to live in a time where the culture, if you will, at that time, there were teachers and then there were trainers. The teachers, in which we identified as coaches, prepared you to understand the why you were doing something. We weren't practicing to just practice. We were practicing with a purpose. Every drill that we did, I was very fortunate to learn why. When a coach would introduce a new drill, he would say why, and then he would connect it to how we're going to utilize that particular drill in the game, which would ultimately allow us to make a decision whether we just want to play or are we playing with the purpose, and the purpose being to win. Well, Mo, I took that for granted because I had never had a bad coach just yet. When I say a bad coach, I had never had a coach who didn't explain to me the why. So that became kind of my motto, my mantra of understanding why I did everything. Why I cut this way as compared to this way. Why I gave a target to the guy passing me the ball, and I understood some players didn't do it. And all of a sudden, Mo, as I began to go to different, you know, basketball camps as a senior in high school, and when I started going to college and playing against other colleges, all of a sudden, Mo, I got outside of what I had learned as a young player. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because very early in my career, like around my freshman year in college, my first year in college, I made a big difference between a coach / teacher and a trainer. And the coaches have to get you prepared to to participate with four other players on the floor at all given time. You hear things like, oh, I'll do anything for the team. You hear things about, you know, I got to sacrifice. Well, the coach has to prepare you for you to problem solve during the course of a game. Everyone's not going to score 20 points and get 10 rebounds or 10 assists. The coaches are preparing you to participate in the team. And then, Mo, it occurred to me what the role of the coach is. The coach's role is to take you to a place that you can't take yourself. That's a coach. When you open yourself up to coaching, suddenly, Mo, you open yourself up to the why. And when that window is open, Mo, you begin to only demand excellence from not only yourself, but the people around you. Mo, I was lucky. I learned that very early. I'm not diminishing trainers. I'm not diminishing other philosophies. But Mo, once I was exposed to that, it has held true for me throughout this entire journey. Your job as the teacher is to expose you and demand and take you to a place that you can't take yourself. Now, once I saw that, I understood it, it changed everything. I wasn't shooting for a field goal percentage from three. I wasn't trying to get stats. I wasn't trying to get points. I had a purpose and I played with the purpose. And then, Mo, I started demanding that everyone around me, without saying a word, become on the same frequency. And Mo, that's just what it is. So the coaches, when I see that happen, I automatically tune into that frequency and I automatically attract other people who tune into that frequency, because why do you play? Like, there's no other reason to play. So that's how it came about, Mo. I saw the difference between a coach and a trainer. A trainer is working on you so that you can do what, you know, whatever it is you're doing. Okay, you want to score 20 a night? Well, yeah, you could work on your footwork. But Mo, it doesn't necessarily translate to the team. Okay, so as a coach, I also, Mo, became a life learner. That's why I continue to watch the game, because it doesn't matter to me when you say, or other people say, old school. It doesn't matter to me if you say new school. Mo, you never stop learning, ever, because you are a teacher. And when you are a teacher of the game, it's important for me to understand the why. It's important. Now, if you need a double step back move, just for instance, as an example, because that was needed at that particular time, I understand that. When you're doing a double step back move and no one's there, I don't get it. I'm not criticizing it. I don't understand it. Utilize what's needed to solve the problem. You play the game as a problem solver. Nothing makes me happier playing basketball or watching a game and you problem solve the game. First quarter, you're doing this, and then Mo, the coach suddenly makes an adjustment and takes that away, and you go, oh, that's pretty cool. God, that's, his team is receptive. It becomes like a chess match. That's why we love the playoffs. And how do we know this, Mo? Because you and I, every year, we watch the game and we say, wow, the regular season is one thing. And then the postseason, the game always reverts back to the core of what it really is. It always reverts back. And that is really fun for me, is to see a young player come into the game and they've been coached. I get the biggest thrill out of that. I don't care who you are, where you come from, the game gives back to you what you give it. And when young people get an opportunity to get coached at an elite level, Mo, it transforms you in a way that you will forever see the game in a different light. So I was lucky. I really was lucky, and I was very lucky to have seen all of the sites. It's not one's better or whatever, but I see the difference. And coaching is an art. Coaching went from Mo. When I was young, our high school coaches did that for extra, like you did it for like extra money because you didn't get paid much as a teacher. Then all of a sudden, Mo, you went to where coaches now have a career. So you don't see many teachers as much as you see years ago. Think about that, Mo. You used to coach high school basketball because, hey, it was a way to make extra money. Then, Mo, it went from doing it as a side thing because you love the game and you wanted to give back to the game because you were a teacher. You were a math teacher or a social studies teacher or English teacher, and you did the coaching because, hey, I like basketball or I like baseball, football or soccer. To all of a sudden, you started doing it because it was your career. And that's what changed in our profession, in our business. And now, Mo, you see college coaches, you see professional NBA coaches, you see professional high school coaches. Okay. And the teaching aspect of this, as from a teaching perspective, is the why. Nothing, Mo, is, I can think of anything more exciting as a participating as a player is to participate with a group of people and everyone contributes. People ask me all the time, do I miss basketball? I said no. But what I do miss, Mo, is being in a group and we have one collective thought. Now, Mo, that is the greatest feeling in the world. You're in a group, you're with 14 other players. And Mo, you are actually have one thought and one purpose. And when groups achieve that, Mo, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. I do miss that. Now, that's the one thing I miss. All right, you had 20 points on a random night in January. Good for you. You know what, Mo? It's good for you. Mo, you play an entire season when everyone has one thought. The greatest, Mo, nothing trumps that. Nothing trumps that level of focus. It's like meditation. Like you, whatever you have going on in your life, Mo, imagine this. Whatever you have going on, the other 14 people, when you get in the locker room, are depending on you to do one particular thing. And Mo, it's like meditation. It's like nothing you, whatever you had going on before you got on this podcast, Mo, you know what's expected of you every time you get on, regardless of whatever else you have going. That Mo is the greatest.
Every
It's the
single day,
greatest.
every single
Every
day.
so.
So if you were playing today and you could play for a team, which coach would you want to play for?
Spolstra.
Eric Spoelstra.
Eric Spolstra.
Okay, maybe you could help smooth over the locker room antics that they've got going on there in Miami. A lot of stuff has been said now.
Eric Spolstra. Eric Spolstra. There are a lot of, I want to say this. Well, I shouldn't say there are a lot. There are some great coaches in the NBA. Eric Spoelstra would be a coach that I would be very interested to play for if given a choice. And the reason being, Mo, is because no matter who you give him, they figure it out and play. Mo, they have every reason this year to not be competitive. You know, you just mentioned they currently have one of their best players, arguably their best player. You know, well, they're going through some things. Well, they just casually come out here on the West Coast and they beat Golden State and they just go out, they just casually do things that you go, how? They just get to the NBA finals with, you know, no disrespect to those guys, like random guys, you know, they just get to the NBA finals.
They
there's
have
no
some good
way.
fortune on their way, though.
Good fortune is part of the coaching. You make your fortune. So whatever the case may be, they just, whatever it is, good, bad, or indifferent, they take your Celtics to seven games.
Let me ask you this though. Jimmy Butler has had multiple instances of him skipping out on morning shoot-arounds altogether, insisting on private flights separate from the Miami Heat team charter plane. And even his former teammate, Kyle Lowry, who was his best friend off the court, grew tired of his headstrong tendencies. So this has been going on for a while.
Yes.
Perhaps behind the scenes, Heat culture isn't Heat culturing anymore.
Can I give you a little, can I take you behind the curtain?
Mm-hmm.
Every team has the same exact problem.
I think that's a pretty specific problem because there's not many teams in the league where their star player is skipping morning shoot arounds multiple times and then not traveling with the team.
Mo, we call that, that's not an accident, first of all. It's not an accident. Everyone gets a team rule book. And Mo, how do we know this and verify this? We know that the union and the team and the league has a collective bargaining agreement.
Mm-hmm.
We know there are rules about how we should attend the game, the transportation, what's expected from the room. They get per diem. What's expected, how many times they can practice. Mo, so we know this. So, yeah, we can sit here and say Heat culture and what have you. When you problem solve as a coach, you figure out how to win. Now, here's what's amazing to me. You have all of this going on, and they're still moving forward. That's coaching. That's coaching at the
East. They're currently seventh in the East, 20-18.
Seven in the East with this team minus Jimmy Butler. Wow. Wow. Okay. They could easily, should be at the bottom half. He problem solves. He solves a problem, and they continue to take players, take a team, take an organization where they can't take themselves. Whatever's going on with the player, so be it. Whatever's going on. Mo, I'll give you an example. One of my few moments that I actually can recall during my career, I can recall the moment that Michael Jordan retired. The first time. I vividly remember from when Michael called me, as he called everyone individually on the team, when we met as a team. I can remember the conversation. And I remember our first day of practice. I can just remember. There's certain things I can remember. Most of it, I don't remember. You know, I'll see a highlight and I'll be like, God, when did that happen? You know, I will see things will be like, oh, yeah, we did lose that game. Or, oh, yeah, you know, just things. But I can remember that moment because that was the first kind of adversity where you're looking at it. You're looking at everyone in the room and one of our brothers wasn't going to be there. And not only was one of our brothers, it was, you know, guy only averaged about 32 points a night. We just won the championship the year before. Everyone was preparing to go for the next, you know, here. And then all of a sudden, like a day or two before practice started, our brother wasn't going to be there. Okay. And the reason I'm giving that example is because, Mo, there was a sudden shift that had to occur in that moment. It was like, oh, yeah, we're just going on, doing our thing. Everyone prepares how they prepare. And then all of a sudden, we had to make an adjustment. Now, in that moment, I learned very quickly that you have to be very flexible in this league. We suddenly had to adjust as a group to say, what are we going to do on offense and defense? Okay. You don't just take 32 points a night out of your lineup and say everything's going to be all right. I don't want to hear that. You don't suddenly take a defensive player of the year off of your defensive scheme and then everything's going to be all right. Well, lo and behold, Mo, long story short, we go on to win 50 games. 50, over 50. If I remember correctly, Mo, I think we might have won more regular season games that year than we did with perhaps. And I just say that for the sake of, you know, the argument, with perhaps the greatest player arguably on both sides of the basketball. And that's when I finally realized what coaching is really all about. That's when I realized that, Mo, that's, you have to have a philosophy which entails an entire group. We did all of this on the fly. We did all of this on, you know, on the floor together. The coaches didn't have time to go on a retreat and talk about what they're going to do for this upcoming team. Mo, you just show up and all of a sudden, you know, that player is not there. Scottie Pippen has one of the greatest individual seasons I had seen. Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, all of the players. We added new players. That was the first year we got Ron Harper on the team, Pete Myers. We had did all of these things. And I don't know if Ron was there, but anyway, we added all these players on our team. And I suddenly realized that's coaching. So Eric Spoelstra, like, if given a choice, he would want Jimmy to be there. Jimmy Butler is one of the best players in this league. He would prefer for this not to be this way. But his team continues to show up with and play at a level of professionalism that to me says, that's the type of guy that you want to be with when the times get tough. And my respect for that group, and we did not win an NBA championship. We did not win an NBA championship that year. But my respect for everyone that was in that locker room has always remained, because that was probably the most difficult season that our organization have gone through. And somehow, some way, Mo, somehow, I have no idea to this moment what really happened. But what I did understand, Mo, is that when you have professionals, you'll figure it out. And we figured it out, Mo, and we had fun. And that was the year Scottie won the MVP.
The All-Star game.
Of the All-Star game. And he could have very easily have been the MVP of the league that year. Mo, he was that good, okay? He had one of those career years. That must have had to be his best year in his entire career. Had to be one of. Statistically, he was so good, Mo, that year. He was so good that year, Mo, that, and we were all playing a different role. We were all running different plays. We were all running different things. But, Mo, we were still winning at an elite level. In a league, Mo, where you take that level of player off your team and you still win 50 games. Winning is very hard, let alone 50 games.
Yeah, but he came third in MVP voting behind Hakeem Olajuwon, who won it, and Dave Robinson, who came second.
I mean, Mo, that's how good he was, okay? And that was when it was a big man's league, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you
came
take
ahead of Shaq and Patrick Ewing.
That's what I'm saying. Mo, he was but we were so good. Our team was so good, and Scottie was the catalyst, okay? That was a new role for him, new role for Horace, new role for everyone on our team. New role for Phil, okay? The Zen master had to change his role. We had to do things, and we did it all on the fly, Mo. And it was, Phil, he should have been coach of the year that year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how good.
He came second to Lenny Wilkins of Atlanta.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was just one of those years, Mo, where I got a chance to see excellence. And we didn't win a championship, but I got a chance to see it, Mo. And we got back, I think, to the second round of the playoffs. We lost to the Knicks in seven games.
Mm-hmm.
And
swept the Cavs in round one.
Yeah, I mean, Mo, you take off Jordan and you still have the capability to sweep a team. I mean, when I think about what that team was able to achieve, and we didn't win a championship. I have never, that was the best team. Because, not because we lost our brother. That was always tough. You know, that was tough because of the circumstances and everything. But Mo, I've never had more fun because Mo, everything was just anew. It was like a season of, okay, we're going to run this play. Well, we have never done this before. And we're going to run this defense. And we're going to have these rotation of players. And we need this player to be this way. And we had to like grow into that role during an NBA game, during the season. You know what I mean, Mo? It was just, it was great. So that is why you play. That is, to me, you want to have teachers and coaches who are prepared for that moment. And that's when you saw, I would argue, probably Phils Jackson's and his staff, because the staff was part of the group. He did his greatest coaching job. Mm-hmm. He was, Mo, every day, Mo, we had to come to practice to put in something new. We couldn't even celebrate a win because we had to get something new. It was like we had to do training camp during the course of the year. Like we had to come to practice on Saturdays and Sundays just to do walkthroughs because we had to be prepared because we were all placed in different places. Like, you know how you'll have like 3 games in 4 days or 4 games in 5 days and you got to take off. Well, we couldn't do that because we weren't good enough to do that. So we had to figure out how to talk ourselves through, but also not practice because we needed our players who were playing a lot to be ready. But we needed players, Mo, to participate early in games. So if we're playing a back-to-back, Mo, we had this theme where we would say we're basically going to get our work done early. So Phil would substitute earlier in the clock to make sure that we wouldn't get so fatigued that we couldn't finish the game late. So he had all of the guys ready to come in at like the 8 minute or 9 minute mark of the first quarter. And I was like, that's kind of different, but let's see what happens. And then the guys on the bench, I began to realize, oh, those guys are, because I was starting at the time, those guys have to be ready. They can't just be hanging out. And they had a role to play, which was different than any probably role they had had thus far. And that, Mo, was a great year. It was just so much fun because we were learning on the fly. But we had a great teacher. You know, Phil Jackson was a great teacher. And we had Johnny Bock, the late Johnny Bock, and the late Tex Winters. And we had Hall of Fame Jimmy Clemens. We had great teachers. And I was fortunate to be a part of that and to have seen that. So that's why I would love to have played, if given a choice in this era, for Eric Spoelstra. Pat Riley, one of the best teachers. You know, you had these guys like Hubie Brown. You just mentioned Lenny Wilkins. You had the late Jerry Sloan. There were just so many incredible, incredible teachers. So I don't know how we got on this subject. Well, but
we were talking about coaching. You know which coach? You know which coach I'd want to play for if I played in the NBA?
Who? Ime Udoka?
That's right, because the Houston Rockets last night took on the number 2 seed Memphis Grizzlies, picked up the win that now put the Rockets in the 2 seed. They've won 4 straight. They're 7-3 in the last 10. This team's looking pretty good. Jalen Green had an insane performance. I don't know if I'm buying into the longevity of the East. Like, I don't know if I can expect 42 points from him in the playoffs, but I'm enjoying this Houston Rockets team. How far do you think this team can really go? Do you think they have a legitimate chance here at winning the Western Conference?
Well, certainly it's not a traditional way of thinking about it when you talk about the Houston Rockets. Because, you know, who is their best player? If you said, like, who is their best player?
I personally think it's Şengün.
Yeah, okay.
Last night, Şengün. Jalen Green had 42.
That's what I'm saying. You and
Some
you.
nights it's Fred Van Fleet. Some
There you
nights,
go.
do you know what I mean? It's like anyone can step up depending on how the game's going and the matchups.
And then you have the kid Thompson, Amen
Yep.
Thompson, right? I mean, he has what? He has like a double
He
double.
had 19 and 13 with five
And
blocks and two steals, which
this
is
was,
insane.
which is so
That's my career numbers
I
in
don't, yeah,
2K.
I don't know who your best player is. I don't know. And that's why I'd say it's a non-traditional, you know, they're not depending on, you know, Sengun, you know, which, you know, 17 and 8, and we're talking about that's those are great numbers from the center position, okay?
Three steals and a block as well. Someone
Yes.
not known for their defense.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Jalen Green, and then this
Frank had
kid,
nine and nine.
yeah, but the
And then
kid
Whitmore
comes off
had
the bench.
16. Yeah.
Off the bench. I was just you took it right out. And I'm telling you, well, I this is a interesting team. But it all starts with their coaching. He is a coach's coach. And you see the impact of having a coach that demands that they play as a unit. Okay.
And plays defense because you can see,
Well,
like,
Mo,
if
it's
Thompson ever gets scored on, Ime takes it like he's committed an egregious crime. Like, if someone
yeah.
scores one bucket on the kid, he's mad.
And then Mo, they have the other kid, is it Jabari Smith? He's out right now for
Yeah,
whatever
Jabari
the
Smith. He was the number two pick in
okay.
the draft.
So again, I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, they have leadership. They have leadership.
Number three pick, sorry.
And
Yeah.
yeah, and they have a team, but you know, Mo, when you start saying they play defense, that's just so fascinating to me that it's like, oh wow, they play defense too. It's kind of like, no, believe it or not, that's the standard. I mean, that's what's so surprising to me. Like we say these little things, and I'm going, how did we get here? Like, that's the game. Like, Mo. We say
Well,
coaching, we say defense wins championships, and then no one plays defense. Or the majority of the teams don't value
yeah.
that
So,
end of the floor.
what's also interesting is, like, if you ask about defense, right? Everyone's going to tell you Tom Thibodeau is the defensive coach in the NBA. The
Well, we can't
Knicks,
say that. We can't say that anymore.
let me land.
Okay.
The Knicks defense this season is middle of the pack, right? It's not bad, but it's not good. It's kind of just there in the middle of the pack, right? Last night, they lost at home to none other than your Detroit Pistons. Cade Cunningham. See, this is what I tweeted out earlier, right? We spoke about Isaiah Collier the other day on the pod. That night, he goes and hits a game winner.
Right.
Yesterday, I was speaking about Cade Cunningham on the podcast. That night, he went out and put up 36 points in the win over the Knicks.
I'm not surprised that the Knicks on the defensive end. I'm not surprised. And
Because
okay,
they're
and the
tired
reason.
as hell. Because they're tired as hell. Because
Well.
they play their starters 40 minutes a night. They're going to be too tired to play defense at a high level for 82 games.
Okay, so I'm gonna I have to hold myself accountable. Okay, that could be you could argue they could be tired, but I would also argue that everyone else is tired. I said it when the trade happened. They're going to miss DiVincenzo because he was the point of attack on the ball, and they're going to miss Mitchell Robinson because he is a rim protector. Okay. Now, when you look at from the stats, you go, ah, well, whatever. But when you understand the team, everyone has a responsibility. DiVincenzo is a really, really good defensive player. And Mitchell Robinson is a really, really good rim protector. Okay. Now, when you take not one, but two, in my opinion, they're better than average at what they do. It may not stand out in the, you know, in the box, in the box score, it may not stand out to you watching the game. You know, you're going to look at the guy who had, you know, Jalen Brunson had 44 points and Karl-Anthony Towns has 30 points and 18 rebounds. That will stand out. But when you look at the game, you go, defensively, they're not really good on the ball anymore. And they don't have any rim protector. No one's blocking shots or intimidating. So people are attacking the basket off the drive, and then they're not good at defending and containing the ball on the perimeter.
Well, I think OG and Bridges are good on-ball defenders, though.
Not against lead guards, they're not. They're good on the wings. You can be a good defender on the wing, but when you're guarding Ja Morant, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, and all those guys, Cade Cunningham, that's a different type of defending. Okay? Mikal Bridges is a really good defender. OG, excellent. But not at that position. Okay, Mo. Not at that position. Very few can do all of those. Okay? You know, there's levels to this. Those guys are good on the wing. Wing defenders, excellent. Look at Shade. Shade just came in there and casually, they cannot defend on the ball. That's their problem right now. That's their issue. And when you can't contain perimeter penetration, it's always going to be a problem. Mitchell Robinson allowed them to make mistakes and he could erase the mistake. That's why you value shot blockers. So right now, you know, when you start giving up 120 points, Mo, at home, when you start giving up, that means the other team has figured out something. And this isn't the first time, Mo. This isn't, you know what I mean? So they have something, they have some, every team has, you know, things they have to correct. However, this is going to be a problem for them. But I would probably say if Mitchell Robinson does come back, suddenly they go from a small team to a big team, right? You know, I would think that Mitchell Robinson would be able to play in there because of what he does on the defensive end, which would ultimately would help them. Scoring points is not a problem. When you start scoring 119 and 120 points and you're still losing the game, Mo, that means something is not going right on the defensive end.
Yeah. Well, Mitchell Robinson is scheduled to return to practice in January, which is January now, so it should be sometime soon. But we are scheduled to return tomorrow with more from the Hoop Genius podcast. So subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. BJ, appreciate you as always. Appreciate you guys at home who tune in. And we will see you tomorrow with more to talk about from around the NBA. The Cavs are going to try to get their revenge on the Pacers for ending their winning streak. And then there's a bunch of other things that we're going to talk about from around the league. So we'll see you tomorrow. And until then, get buckets.